and gentlemen, thank you for joining us for tonight's comic book club. And now, here are your hosts, Phil LaPage and the Nerd Endeavor!
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And that's our Bat of the Booth, Booth Man!
Booth Man!
Thank you for your chill out stylings, Booth Man. We appreciate it.
Keeping it cool.
Yeah. So we got some exciting news for the show. This is not coming out until
tomorrow.
Yeah. But
we got an advanced copy of Hackslash. Comic Club is on the cover!
Yeah!
Come on!
It's something else. We're the fourth. quote.
Yeah, and everybody else has a website address, and for us, we were like, they just put Comic Book Club.
That's right.
It's fine. People know how to find us.
Yeah,
we're
absolutely
out there.
They just got to go to the only comic book club that exists in the world. And there we are.
Yep.
Well, that tears it, though. We're a news source now. We're journalists.
Yeah.
So. We're the fourth highest rated news for comics.
Good. That's the kind of confidence level that journalists need to have to really deliver.
Here's my review of the issue. I liked it.
I think
it was kind of.
What do you think, Hackslash? How would you like us to review it?
Good. It's good.
That face. If they could find a way to put that face on the comic.
If they could put that, like, the face right there. Just...
Like, I don't know what this was.
This is going to be great for our listeners at home.
Yeah.
We're also going to, like, be throwing the. We're in blue swords now, guys.
Yeah.
So you gotta be careful.
Hold on, let me put my skinny tie a little closer to my neck. As a professional.
Oh, good. Oh, you look very professional now. We have two professional people who are our guests tonight.
Yeah,
we're very
do.
Excited to have them here. So let's welcome them out. Ladies and gentlemen, C.B. Cebulski and Porter Mason!
Yeah! Yeah!
Since I do it at the beginning. Porter, you are the creator of the web strip and just published book, Basis Wanted, which is awesome. And CB is the writer of X and Furnace, among other things, and also has many interesting jobs at Marvel Comics.
Yep. Do whatever they give me.
Porter, you want to chat a little bit about Basis Wanted? Tell us what the general idea of the strip is.
I do.
All right.
Let's keep it formal, guys. Let's keep it formal.
It's a strip about music stuff. So it's about it focuses mainly on this shitty local band, but there's like kind of a popular band involved, analogous to Coldplay, perhaps.
Ah.
Who knows? I don't know, but that's about right. And then also follow some people, just like people who buy music, consumers, and some people at a music label. So it's sort of it's a big world, but all revolving around the music industry.
Is that something? I mean. Were you? I know you do comedy. Is music something you're really into as well, and you're drawing on specific experience there, or is it more analogs and doing a lot of reading?
It started out. I started the strip because of I had a big interest in music and got really into. I got hooked on music. Remember when BMG and Columbia House gave you all the free
stuff? Yeah.
I moved several times in 1 year, and I figured out you could just get the different addresses. And you keep getting 15 CDs.
We made up a fake brother, Jason. And then my mom was like, you're going to get caught. And we were so scared, we just paid him all off.
Oh.
When really we should have just been like, he died or something.
Let me tell you, we wrote no letters to anyone, and no one came after us, and that was fine. And I got like
what a scam.
What did you buy in the end? Was it like you get 15 free and they have to buy 5 for like $25 each or something like that?
Yeah, but you can cancel it.
Or you can move.
Yeah. Well, what? You spend your whole life on the run. I don't know if that's better.
Because I have all the pavement CDs.
Yeah, right, exactly. I know I got my Counting Crows collection, but it filled
out. Okay. Yes. Well, anyway, yeah, so that's what I got. I was very interested in music, and I was looking to make a strip to put in to sell to all weeklies because I had played around with doing a comic strip syndication, like daily syndication, and that's just such a weird. Sisyphean task. Like I applied and like was talking with some syndicates for a while, and then things would end up getting like put off, and like I was in development for a long time. So the all weeklies you can represent yourself, and you don't need a syndicate, which also means you don't pay 50%. You don't lose 50% of the money you get. And I thought that a strip about music and local bands would be good for all weeklies because they have the listing. So it was a combination of being interested and also feeling like, oh, that'd be a good niche to fill for them.
I mean, it's interesting because you have the strip on the web, but it seems like even for the majority of people who can get a gigantic audience or conceivably a larger audience on the web, still the pinnacle is getting it into a newspaper, getting it into print. Is that...
Well, I mean, it was for me, yeah. For when I was little, that's all I just wanted to be. I wanted to be Peanuts, you know, that's all you wanted. But then after dealing with newspapers for a long time, it was just... And then seeing the writing on the wall of the, like, constantly failing newspaper industry, like, you know. Then that hasn't become as much of a thing, and it's still such a nice thing to have it on a physical media of some sort. Like, putting out the book was awesome. I did a book in college, and that was a great feeling too. But so it is still something like a, I don't know. It feels so good to have something in your hand that you made.
It's not real until you see it on the internet. It's like it's there. But when it's actually printed, you're like, oh wow.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
The exact feeling.
Yeah. And what is the response to the book so far?
It's been pretty good. I was just on them. My big goal was just to make sure I didn't go into bankruptcy. Because I didn't. Yeah! We did it, guys.
Yeah. All of us did.
It's been good in terms of, since I've been having to manage like the publishing myself, it's found enough of an audience that, you know, I'll be able to keep doing it. It's let me know, like, I can keep doing this, basically. I can keep doing the strip. I can keep, what I'm trying to set up to do is so I can put out a book every year, and that can be part of, you know, how I can survive off the strip. So.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Great. We're definitely going to chat a little bit more about this in a second, but let's turn over to you, CB. Talk about the various books you're doing. One of them, X and Furnace, is coming
out. Yes.
The third issue just came out. David Finch covers. Giuseppe Camicoli is doing the artwork, and... don't want to spoil anything for anyone who hasn't read it yet, but it's bringing magic back in some way, shape, or form. The fourth issue is going to print at the end of this week, and it's going to, you know, shake up the X-Men universe a little. And, you know, coming out of this, there's going to be a New Mutants book that Zeb Wells is writing with, you know, Diogenes Nevis on artwork, and the outcome of this book plays a big role in that, you know, awesome. my first big Marvel X-Men related thing. So
that's
I'm done.
That's it.
All I needed to do. Exactly. Where can I go from here?
I think this is something we talked about a little bit back in San Diego when you just announced the book. But this feels like something that's been building for a while in the Marvel Universe, this nostalgia for the New Mutants. That there's been so many writers have been using the characters, picking them up after they're gone for so long. Why is there such an intense light for these
characters? I think it's just the generation of the writers and a lot of the editors now, too, is that, you know, we grew up with those characters, and they were the first kind of team characters that we encountered. It was the Teen Titans on the DCN and the New Mutants on the X-Men. And we were all big X-Men fans because that's what our, you know, older brothers, some of the older kids we had grown up. But the X-Men, when the New Mutants came out, it was the first book of, you know, younger kind of mutants that we all associated with. So guys like, you know, myself, Fraction, Brubaker, Bendis, you know, and then editors, you know, along like, you know, Tom Rebord and, you know, from the younger, Nick Lowe, and some of these guys are catching up. And remember those characters very fondly as, you know, characters that we were able to relate to just from the age perspective. And now that we're kind of driving the bus editorially or, you know, creatively, that we're all looking to kind of use those characters again. Fraction, you know, Uncanny, you know, and, you know, just me with X and Furnace, and a lot of people have been, you know, fans themselves have been asking for it as well.
Cool.
Now, would you, this is kind of a question for Alex, his favorite New Mutant, his favorite,
yes.
Not for you,
oh,
so it's on behalf, it's on behalf of Alex.
Okay.
Is that going to feel comfortable asking the question?
Perhaps.
We don't talk.
Yeah, we did this. We broke up before the show. I don't know if I should say this. I didn't tell you, James, either. It's a little awkward, but...
Yeah, it's weird. Quite, we're working through it.
Cypher is a mutant.
Yes.
whose power is to translate languages.
Yes.
What role will he be having?
I do not know if Cypher with the Y, Doug Ramsey, will be coming back.
Yeah!
In your face!
No, that's fine. It's one of the most important character deaths in Marvel history, and I think we should keep it sacred.
Well, there's the new cipher with an I that's out in Young.
She doesn't do much translating.
No, it doesn't.
It's intangible.
As a language guy myself, Cipher, I think, is a fantastic character.
Yeah! Yes! Yeah, you were trying to do a thing there, but then it turned back. Yeah.
It's not over. It's not over yet!
That's why we broke up.
There's so much you can do with the character if he comes back, I think, just because with languages come so far, just, you know, the language of science, be it biology and DNA, and the language of computers. I mean, that character being able to translate language, I think you could take the character to another level if the character does.
Or you could take him to, like, France. And, like, he could be like, I get this. I like it back in
the U.S. The tough time in the economy, they only have to hire one
person
guy to translate everything.
They all speak English.
Great. Millions of stories.
All right, you're writing most of
it. Yeah, I have a very large box.
Yeah,
you got magic back, you got warlock back. I wouldn't be surprised if along the line some
he'll sneak in. Shape
or form cipher will sneak in somewhere. So.
Cool. Let me know. I mean, another thing, totally different subject for a second to talk about. You're very active on Twitter, as I
yes.
know. And one thing that you've been doing recently a lot is pretty constant little updates for people on, hey, this is how you can get noticed or not noticed by comic publishers. This is how you can submit. Sometimes replying to people, sometimes replying to emails and tweet form. Why is this important? Why is this something that you're pushing so hard right now?
It started as a form of venting almost, because I get so many people, especially after New York Comic Con, is where it kind of really built up, because I went out and I met a lot of people, and I was Sally, and people kept coming up to me and talking, wanting to know how to get in, and they've been given so much bad advice that I found out over the past couple months, couple years, from different people in the industry, people who are new to the industry, haven't written that much, or people who are old, who haven't written a comic in 10 or 15 years, that I felt that there wasn't a voice representing a lot of those people, and you know, part of my job at Marvel is I'm the main artistic talent scout, and I can't do a lot with writers and recruitment, but as a writer myself, I can offer the advice that I went through having been with, written for Image and written for Dark Horse and written for some smaller independent publishers. So it just so happened that, you know, when people would send me different stuff or pitch me different things or I'd see stuff online, I'd normally just vent by myself or vent some of the editors and Marvel, like, I can't believe people are doing it this way. And it finally hit me that I got an email one day where someone sent me something completely wrong, and I'm just like, you know, I'm not the guy you should be sending this to. You know, if you're pitching ideas to Marvel, this is how you should do it. And just turned into this chain of things, and then just turned out whenever somebody sent me something or sent me an inquiry, I'd reply to the person, but I'd also just try to take what I told that person and put it on a Twitter to make it a general kind of, you know, base of knowledge for people. You know, just here's what people do wrong, here's what people do right, here's what you should be thinking about. So, and it's turned out pretty well, I think. It's
what do you think the biggest first time mistake that people make when they're submitting to, say, Marvel or any comic?
They send everything in one shot. You know, dear, you know, Axel Alonso, dear Tom Grieber, here are 8 or 9 pitches with Marvel characters for revamps and miniseries, and send them in. And or here's my artwork, and send in, you know, 10 1-megabyte files. And that's completely wrong. The first part is you have to form a relationship. I mean, there's legalities involved when you're a writer submitting. When you're an artist submitting, it's different. But still, there's always a rapport that has to be achieved with the editor before they're even going to deem to look at your stuff. Because most of the time, it's just delete, 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 delete if they don't know who you are, and you're just
like, let's say I wanted to write an ongoing Cypher series or something like
that. Hypothetically,
the best way of doing that would be to start a comic book talk show, right?
Because look at the relationship between these now.
Cool.
Advice taken.
And I ran out of questions.
Yeah. That's the important one.
The biggest mistake that writers make is that thinking that they're going to be given the opportunity to revamp a major character or write a arc on an established book or launch a 4 or 5 issue miniseries on their first time out.
Yeah.
One of the important things to remember is the way that they should be starting is the way that most people start, is with an 8-page story, with an 11-page story, with a 1-issue fill-in. So people tend to think much too big, and it's good to think big. You know, everyone's been dreaming of doing this since they were a kid, but it's thinking big is one thing, but the reality is it's always starting.
Well, I've been pitching Headless Spider-Man for a long time now. No one seemed to get on board with this. In continuity, take his head off. Yeah, the whole. I have a bunch of artists doing the covers. It's costing me a fortune.
We got apes. We got headless.
Headless costumeless.
Spider-Man headless. X-Men headless.
Yeah.
Punisher headless.
You get it. Yeah, you get it. See, he gets it. He gets it.
Headless Horseman headless.
Yeah. Headless and headless horseman.
What happens with MODOK when he's just a head?
Interesting. The character's done. Eliminated.
Prior to you putting, that sounds like a great idea, and it seems like Twitter ends up being good for that. Like, putting what would have been a private conversation, but didn't have any need to be private necessarily, mm-hmm. putting it public and having that information available to the public. Prior to some of the stuff you just said, this is what you should know, your first story will be X, Y, or Z. Was that information available publicly?
It was available, but in different ways, shapes, or form. And the way that, I've been guilty of this as anybody else. I've given people, in the beginning of my career, wrong information, because I just didn't want to talk to them. You just want to do the whole, don't talk to me, talk to Axel Alonso, here's his email address. So, or you just, you kind of deflect because you just want to get by the conversation, you don't want to answer it. And the way that I've established things in the last 3 or 4 years is it's better to be honest with people, as I've taken a more role as a town scout. Honesty is always the best quality. I want to give people the right information, even if it's honest and it's not. It's helpful, but it's not what they want to hear. I tend to be an optimist, and I like to give people give them hope. So I always tell people what they wanted to hear. But sometimes I realize it's better just they might not want to hear, but it's better to be honest about it because it's going to give them a little bit more realism about it.
This is an old story. I lived on a golf course growing up, and I would always cut through this yard going home. And so then,
how is this going to tie?
Here, it will. And I always had comic books with me. I'd be walking and reading them on this big field. And this kid eventually came up to me who lived in the house, and he was like, "You read comic books?" And I was like, "Yeah, yeah." He's like, "I have this art I'm submitting." I was like, "Oh, wow, cool." And he brought these literally terrible drawings to me, and I couldn't tell him it was terrible. I was like, "Good luck, man." And I stopped going that way. I would go home a totally different way because I felt terrible
that
about
kid,
it.
That kid was Jim Lee.
Yeah. Really got me in
there. I remember once I were at a convention. This is where it hit me. It was like 5 years ago, I think. We were one of the early Philadelphia shows. And we were doing portfolio reviews. And there was a whole line of people. It was me and Tom Grebor were supposed to be doing reviews. And Tom's like, "Look, here's how it's going to go. If you want a nice review and told you're great, you want someone to kiss your ass, go see him. And if you want an honest review, and I'm going to tell like it is, you might like what I want to hear, but I'm going to shoot you straight, come talk to me." And he was half joking, but everybody's like, "Oh, I went to Tom." And I was like, "Wow, that means something to people, because they're not going to grow unless you actually teach them." And so,
I mean, I know I mentioned when answering your question that I was in this weird, newspaper syndicate development hell for a while. And a lot of it was, you could not get a straight answer out of people at the syndicate of saying, "I just wanted to know, can I move on with my life, please, or not?" Yeah. It wouldn't, it'd be like, "We really love it. Everyone here loves it." It was like, "Just tell me, if everyone loves it, I would already be in the newspaper," but no one would give you a straight answer. And so I finally kind of found someone, developed a relationship enough with one of the representatives there, and he would say, honestly, this probably isn't going to happen because, the head of editorial doesn't like it, even though a lot of other people do. And it was like, great, I just want to know that so I can, do the next thing, or whatever. Yeah.
And it's funny, the question that we struggle with now, and I talk to Joe Cassano, a couple people about this often, is that when you tell a person that it's time to give up, because you don't want to crush their hopes, but when I took over kind of talent submissions, which were Marvel was about 6 years ago, there were people who had been submitting literally, for 10 years prior, I told them, "You're going to get letters from these guys every year, every other month, something like that." And you just got to keep giving them hope, and they don't get any better. Literally, I just got samples last week from this guy that's been submitting to Marvel for 20 years possibly. But it's still the same stick figure drawings, and this guy still has some kind of hope. We always send him back letters of encouragement hey, this and that. But he's an extreme example. But there's other guys who have come to his conventions consistently over the last 4 or 5 years or have been submitting that Joe knows even from back in his event comics, and they've been trying, and they've gotten a little better. But this one guy we know, he's like 48 now, and he's been trying and trying and trying. He has a really good day job, but his dream is to break into comics. But the truth of the matter is we don't think he's ever going to break in, but it's like, how long do you keep the hope alive, or how long do you just tell someone, you struggle with something, when are we going to be honest with this guy and tell him it's not going to happen? The truth is we probably never will, because you want to keep going.
Has there ever been somebody in your experience who, over a longer period of time, say 6 months or something like that, has really pushed forward, really taken the comments to heart, and actually gotten better and then actually adopted?
Yeah, I've seen guys, they're younger guys, to be honest, that have grown and have learned, and guys that have been submitting to me for years, Clay Mann is a guy now. He's been doing some things at Marvel for a little bit. He's doing the new Electro book for Marvel, and he was a guy who invented a show 5 years ago. He was a plumber, and he'd come to the show and he'd just say, "Hey, look at my stuff." And he's very quiet. He'd come with his brother. We always remember him because there was potential there. And the way that he got to be known through us was he would send in envelopes to Marvel every month or every other month with new samples, but he would color in one of his illustrations and put it on the outside of the envelope. So I always knew, oh, this is Clayman Samples. Let's go. And so we'd always open Clayman Samples. So we followed him that way. And he grew, and Joe took an interest in him, and Joe helped him out. And some of the others took an interest to finally get him to where he is now. He's one example like that. Umberto Ramos is another one. That Tom Brevoort reviewed him. You know, was his first portfolio ever. He came up from Mexico. Tom Brevoort reviewed him. Gave him a really harsh review. And Tom's great when he does reviews, because he gets out the, you know, the straight edge, and he gets out the blue pencils, and he really, really goes to town on people's reviews. And Umberto learned from that. Now he's, you know, Umberto Ramos. And David Finch, the same way. David Finch didn't pick up pencils on drums until he was 20.
Wow.
So, yeah. There's guys that it happens with. So, but it's, it tends to be the younger, some of the younger guys. There's no one of an older age, I think, that's ever just come out. And
older people are useless. You know?
Yeah, pretty much.
yeah. I just want to get my
every show you get in your disco. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
Well, what have they done for us lately?
Meddling kids.
See?
Something that's happening
in the
next couple of days.
Donate our
audience. But next couple of days is the Marvel submission policy is changing.
It's changing, yes. So it's unfortunate. And there's good news and there's bad news, let's put it that way. And this shouldn't be online until after Thursday, I think. But you know, Marvel is going to be the last publisher now. We're ending our open submission policy. And we've kept it open for as long as we can. And we've been hopeful, and you know, people, it's called, you know, what Hollywood calls the slush pile. Anyone can send anything in, and it's always reviewed, from the artist samples to inkers to colorists, as well as to writer's submissions, as long as they have the proper legal paperwork, the Marvel Idea submission form attached. But we've spent the last couple months just actively reviewing what works and what doesn't in submissions, and we've looked at everyone we've hired. We actually printed out everyone that's gotten a new work for hire contract over the last 2 years, and not a single person had come from the submission form, the submission policy, the slush pile. And in reviewing how we've hired talent, it's been through conventions, portfolio reviews, meeting people through B, editors actively finding writers and artists that they like through the independent world, you know, they go to the comic store, read books, or C, you know, word of mouth. You know, Brubaker recommends, brings in Fraction, works with Fraction, Fraction works with Remender. Brent Bendis knows Brian Reed, brings him in. So there's a heavy word of mouth thing, especially where writers are concerned, and a lot with artists too. So we've decided that while we're ending the open submission policy, we are going to increase we're more reactive in a way. We look at what's been sent to us. We're going to be more proactive in, you know, getting writers from the independent world and in, you know, stepping up our presence at conventions, and then also increasing kind of word of mouth, putting the word out to the people that work, that, hey, if you guys know any people that you know, who you think are talented, let us know, because we're going to start reviewing a little bit more.
So if I'm a new artist or writer and I do want to write for Marvel, I still have options there in terms of, like, you are going to do the portfolio review.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And, I mean, what are the other possibilities there? Because I feel like a lot of people's initial reaction when they hear this on Thursday are going to be to freak out, and then maybe if they read it, to freak out.
If they do read it, they're going to. The fact is that, you know, we haven't really hired anyone. I would say back as long as I've taken it in 6 years going through that. Clayman aside, because we met him at a convention first, we followed him through the submissions. And then Mike Hawthorne is an artist, and he recently posted that he was offered a job that never came through Marvel, through the open submissions policy, which I don't know how long ago that was, but those are the two, you know, examples of where it kind of worked. But, you know, the reality is that, you know, the best way, we always say this at convention, and people hate it, and I know, but it's the truth, is that the best way to get published at Marvel or DC, Dark Horse, is to get published elsewhere first, be it through Image, be it through one of the smaller publishers, you know, be it Arcana or Xenoscope or Third World, or, you know, just go out and self-publish, do your own fanzine. Because the editors, you know, I know others speaking for Marvel, we make an effort from Alonzo, Tom Brevoort, the executive editors, on down to, you know, the associates and the assistants, we read a lot. We read comics. We love comics. We go into Artist Alley. We pick up the fanzines. We like to read stuff. We pick up the mini-comics. And that's where we find a lot of these new voices. So doing that is one of the better ways to get into Marvel. Because not only does it show you have the talent, and secondly, it shows you have the motivation to actually do it. You're actually, like comics enough where you're going to put your own money and invest and take the time where you're not going to have any return, that you really want to be in this business. And that also, it's a lot easier for an editor to pick up and read a comic in that form, especially for writers are concerned, than it is to actually read writing samples in the form of a script or a novel or something like that. You know, you have every editor kind of keeps a stack or slush pile of stuff they want to read on their desk or stuff they've been sent. Where it's like, you know, you're going to the John, it's like, hey, I'll just pick up what's on top and read them. Holy shit, this is pretty good. And,
I'm also going to announce that I'm ending my open submission.
What?
I'm one person.
it means is that my relatives at holidays are going to have to stop going, like, you should put my kid in that strip.
Kid loves music. Loves music.
My relatives are cartoonish.
Bad news all around, guys. Let's move on with our first section, which we like to call the stack. First thing we are going to talk about is Dark Avengers number 2, continuing the Dark Avengers saga. What'd you guys think about this issue?
Well, it was a lot of over-the-top fun. I mean, the guy gets his head ripped off. That's
girls.
Awesome. Yeah, a girl even.
Yeah. Who would have thought? I think it was possible.
I thought you loved that sort of thing.
I don't love just heads coming off.
Wait.
As much as I claim to love Headless Spider-Man.
Oh, okay.
But his head doesn't come off. It's already off.
We don't get to see it happen?
No. The thing isn't about it coming off. It's about him having less of a head.
Wow. You, sir, you just lost my $3.99.
Oh, you think I'm going to be one of those high-priced comics?
Is this the head in question, or are there others?
No, that's the head in question. It's a lightning head.
Who would have thought all that lightning was in her neck?
Me.
Yeah.
I think this is a really fun book. I don't know. There's this weird thing going on in my head about it where it's really fun. It's really enjoyable. It's big action. Basically, for those of you who haven't been reading it, villains are now the Avengers, essentially.
That's the dark part.
Yes. It's almost exactly Thunderbolts meet Mighty Avengers down to... Two arcs ago in Mighty's Avengers, they went up against Doctor Doom. Here, the first thing that happens with the Dark Avengers is they're going up against Doctor Doom.
Yeah.
And it's the concept of Thunderbolts together. But I'm enjoying it at the same time.
Yeah, what's enjoyable for me, there's a lot of like weird kind of moments where the bad guys take over, you know, the headquarters, and all of a sudden they get a distress call, and they're like, what do we do? We're the bad guys.
From a villain.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the weird part. It's like, do we go and save him?
And
then they were like, there was a fun moment where they were like, all right, so we're a team. I guess we should hang out and get to know each other. And they're like, what? No, we're bad guys. We don't do that.
I thought that was funny. I thought it's so weird that they're like already doing something. You don't even know much about any of them or why they're together. And they're like, half the book's about Morgan Le Fay hating Dr. Doom. And
they had a whole conversation about that where Norman Osborn is like, okay, you guys are a team now. What I want you to do is never talk or interact with each other.
Yeah.
Which I think is going to make for a great team book.
Yeah. True.
Gaga, gaga, goo. It's some of Bendis' best dialogue.
Yeah.
I really like it. I don't know why exactly I like it, but I think it's just supposed to be fun comics, and that's what it comes off as.
I liked it, too. I thought there were too many just splash pages, though. Yeah.
See, I'll admit, I was never a big Mike DiDio fan. There's something about his art that never really appealed to me. And starting with the last Wolverine issue, at least, I think Bendis and him have kind of found their niche in a way. Bendis is writing for him, I think, playing to his strengths. I think it's improved. I've really come around to liking a lot of Mike's art.
I think it's great. It works here, and it's definitely, I mean, like you're saying, or maybe you're saying, it is a lot of splash pages. It's a lot of big action, which Thunderbolts was very, by necessity, how it was written. It was very tight. It was very enclosed, sort of, and you can trust anybody. Here is the big action by the Avengers.
So I believe it's actually ga-ga-ga-goo.
Ga-ga-ga-goo.
Okay. The triple guy.
Well played.
Cool. Pick it up, right?
Oh, yeah.
Awesome. I'm on the fence.
Ooh. Nice. All right. Last thing. Next thing we're going to talk about is Robin 183, which is the last issue of Robin. You can feel free to take it out of the bag.
Just be careful.
What'd you think about this?
I like this a lot. I thought it was a great Robin story. Robin's a book I always wish kind of was more popular and was a little bit better, but this I thought was a great way to end it.
Yeah, I wish the rest of the series was like this issue because I would have been picking it up. I never really got into Robin as much on his own until this issue, and I read it and I was like, oh, great, it's finally good and it's ending.
Yeah.
So art is really, really helpful.
Art's great.
Yeah. I think Fabian Nyesvesa wrote this, right? He did a really nice job saying what he wanted to say about Robin. You know, a lot of the Bat books are ending right now, and with varying results, Birds of Prey was terrible because it said nothing about the characters and nothing interesting happened at all. Yes. They fought a robot guy for a couple of pages and then talked and then left. this, at least, he kind of says, okay, this is what I think about the character of Robin.
Yeah.
I'm going to tie up the plot points that are happening in my book, but also make a statement about the character.
And kind of drive it forward, and then he was like, well, I'm kind of Batman Jr., so I better start acting more like Batman. And he kind of solves this fight, this big battle he's going to have, in a very smart way, and kind of a more devious way, more Batman way, which I thought was great.
that being said, I think the thing that I really liked about it is that he also says, but I am not Batman, and I don't want to be Batman.
Yeah.
I'm me. I'm
That's Robin. What the tension is. What Because we were talking about why everyone hates Nightwing. It's because he's like Batman, but not. And it seems like, why don't you play that tension when in Nightwing they're like, no, he's different. He's in New York. And he likes parachuting. It's like, that's not enough.
Well, there was that panel in Nightwing where Batman was like, parachuting, yuck.
Yeah. Just a little pop-up bubble. One thing I hate about this book is this, DC's running Origins and Omens to the back, and it's got all these, Scar is this, what a
lion.
Maybe the son of Hulk.
Jerry.
Yeah.
Is a lot of
what do they call the blue
Guardian.
Guys? The blue guys that run the Green Lanterns?
Guardians.
Guardian, yeah. One with a scar on her face, and she's like, bad things are coming. And they do like a two-page comic of like Robin being sad about something. And then it does a big splash page of all these like disconnected images.
And it's supposed to be, the whole thing is supposed to be like what Geoff Johns was doing in the back of a couple of his books that people really took to and really liked, where it gives you a preview of the coming year in JSA or the preview of the coming year in Booster Gold. Which is very cool, and I think this is supposed to be like it, but it's so murky
terrible.
Most of the time that you can't really, like, oh, Nightwing is going to be in Robin's book. That's really exciting.
Yeah, and predictable.
Yes. Yeah, there you go. That being said, I would say definitely pick this up, right?
Yeah.
Even though it's the last issue, even if you haven't read the rest of the series, I think it stands alone.
I would like you to give more recaps, like you do that other book of, like, Twitter recaps of, like, they fight someone, then they leave and talk.
One of our popular features.
That's why we're on the cover of Hack Slash.
Yeah. Yeah.
Comic Foundry, last issue. Normally we don't talk about magazines, but we've had the Comic Foundry guys on the show a bunch of times. Why didn't this magazine work?
Well, it just sucks because it did a really good job of being different than Wizard, and I look forward to a lot of the issues because it had a little bit more of an indie feel, and I feel like it did a really good job of, when doing interviews, asking different questions. I mean, Wizard focused a lot on mainstream stuff, and some of their interviews weren't as in-depth.
Well, and this is much more mature. Like, Wizard would have a two-page spread that was like, whose tits are these? And it'd be like a bunch of comic book characters' breasts. And it was like, we don't, who cares about this?
See, Wizard was all press releases. It was stuff that you couldn't not you could find on the internet easily. Comic Foundry actually had content. It had interviews. It had stuff you wanted to read. They actually went out and did the time and asked people intelligent questions and found out stuff that you couldn't get.
And like with the indie books, it'd be like, if you like Razzle, you'll like this.
Yeah.
And it like hooks people up with comic books they might like, which is great.
Plus, they have really smart people doing that, like people who work at comic book stores and know.
Yeah.
You know, not just some random guy they gave a job to.
Is some of the content more like maybe to Inside Baseball League kind of thing? Like very...
They tried to walk a line where it was...
Yeah, but
yes, they didn't.
Well, where it was more accessible and interesting, and you know, the interviews not necessarily being chatty, but more conversational at least. But I don't know. I think it comes down to it's really expensive to do print. I mean, they certainly said, no, it has nothing to do with any of that. It's just we were very busy doing other things. Like Tim is making OliviaMunn.com, which is basically just like, check out Olivia Munn's tits and compare them.
Which, aren't they always the same?
Nope.
I check out the website.
Hours on that website.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, distribution angle. Didn't they get screwed by Diamond at first?
Yeah. Well, this is only, what, the fourth issue or third?
Fourth.
Yeah.
It just is upsetting because it was a really great comic book magazine that was done really well, and it saddens me that it's not going to continue.
And the last issue said, farewell issue, suck it, Wizard.
Yeah.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Are they going to continue online at all? I haven't talked to them about it.
I don't, I mean, they said they would. I don't know if they actually will.
I think it's two people to do it, Tim and Laura.
Yeah.
I think she said she was going to continue it. Tim is doing this tit site, so he won't be, he'll be a little busy doing that.
Man, I hope Tim never listens to
this. He won't.
It is Olivia Munn.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't even know who that is.
The show.
She's a girl.
Really?
Yeah.
She does the show.
Yeah. She attacks.
But she's not a comic book, right? She's just on a, like, the TV.
I think he's one of those old people you hate.
Yeah. I knew it.
Get off my lawn.
Anyway, go pick up the last. last issue, even though it is the last issue, so they can be like, hey, what about the sales? We'll go do one more. Invincible number 59. Pete, you did not like this. Why?
Yeah, this blue. Basically, Invincible has been doing a really good job of delving into the character, really setting up a great world. Issue 60 is the super issue where they're bringing in everybody to in the Image world, kind of like the callback, like Todd McFarlane and everybody who kind of started Image is going to be working on different comics like Invincible. And instead of it being a great issue to like, hey guys, you know, get right, it's just this B story that blows.
B for blows.
Yeah, and it was just like, hey, let's just do a comic about a villain who sucks, and then he's got a wife and kid, which makes you feel bad for hating this guy, even though he's obviously a loser, and then the kid and wife die. But by issue 60, because it's going to be amazing.
You like this.
I enjoyed this, actually. It's a story from the villain's perspective. I don't think, you know, it knocks it out of the park or anything like that, but it's certainly something different than he's trying with the narrative coming at it from that way. And the end.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay.
I was going to say, I didn't like it. I thought it was... Like, we've all seen stories from the villain's perspective. It's been done, and I think his doesn't add anything to it, except... And it was so obvious. He, like, brings his plan is to get... Put his wife and kid, like, as if they're kidnapped, so Invincible will come save them. And he's like, don't worry, everything's going to be fine. Like, they're going to die. They're probably going to die. And they die! By his own... By his hands.
Yeah, I'll agree with both of you. This is my least favorite issue of Invincible ever. And
yeah.
I started out with hope, and I kept thinking, wow, this is really cliche. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love Robert, he's a friend, and I've liked everything he's done for the most part. Clark did, Invincible are fantastic.
Yes,
but, in my head, I'm like, I had to believe it. Robert's not going to make this so obvious. He's not going to make it cliche. I can see this is going, but he's not going to go, but he's going to twist it. And when it ended the way it did, I was like, that was just predictable and was cliche. I'm like, Robert's a better writer than that.
I feel like this must be like a fill-in.
I'm upset because the world has been so great and so rich. And I'm like, oh man, what's gonna happen? And then it's like, oh, here's a shitty B story.
Here's I think in particular why I actually like this. I think I liked it more in the span of what he's been doing lately. I think we've been very critical, or at least I've personally been very critical of where he's gone with Invincible, gone with Walking Dead before the past couple of months at least, where it feels like he's been spinning his wheels. He hasn't really been adding anything to the narrative, hasn't been adding anything to the characters. And every issue felt very light on story, like one thing happened and that's it. And at least with the past couple of months of Invincible, he's been pushing the story forward. He's been
dealing
with the characters.
Very good.
Yep.
Last issue, I think he went back to the 16-pounder structure,
awesome,
which was great.
Great.
And even if this was a one-off that was cliche and didn't really work, at least he was trying something different with the narrative, which I really appreciated.
Right. Different for him, but not different from comic books.
Sure.
So you're giving him a mulligan, basically.
Wow.
Yes.
It's a golf term. I grew up on a golf course.
I didn't think you'd bring it back around.
I did.
I
almost had you.
So everybody else says don't pick this up. We're on to X-Factor number 40.
Yes.
Big ruiner at the end of this issue. Man.
Yeah, Peter David was on the show right before the last issue came out. And he was like, all right, listen, everybody in the comic book reading business who like has an opinion,
which is something you get paid to do,
not us, but go out and spoil the end of comic books. The next three issues of X-Factor are going to be huge reveals. Please, whatever you do, don't spoil them. And we didn't really last time, but this time maybe we should.
Well, okay, here's the thing that I would say about this issue. This is something I said about the last issue of Astonishing X-Men as well. Just general rule of writing, I think, if you mention a character that hasn't been mentioned in a really long time for no particular reason in the middle of your issue, that character is definitely coming back at the end of the issue.
Yeah.
So I didn't really feel this was a big spoiler when...
Layla Miller comes back at the end, which is a really big move,
but
he does broadcast
cool,
when he's like, Layla Miller, yeah, I remember her. I ended up in the future with her, and I left her there. God, I wish I could bring her back. Oh, well, back to killing myself. And then she pops up and is like, don't kill yourself.
Yeah. It wasn't as clumsy as Astonishing X-Men, which is like, for no reason, they're like, you know who was a nice guy? Forge. Well, anyway, let's go back to investigate this thing. And then later on, they're like, oh, man, I remember Forge. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I wish the more books would just do that and then never bring him back, but just have it be like, hey, yeah. Remember Forge? Anyway.
Yeah. Well, you were. them back.
Right.
Wow.
But,
there you go. That's the difference between real
I just want to weigh in on this. The last, this issue.
Like, Peter
last...
David's not going to walk in because we brought him up.
Right? No, he's not. No.
This issue and the last one of X Factor have been amazing. Very
yes. Yeah.
Well done. Emotional roller coasters. The last one, I freaked out. I was like, I can't believe he did that. So for this one, I was like, oh, man, don't get goofy on me now. I can't take another emotional roller coaster. So I was happy with the softer blow, with the tease, like, hey, you know what? So-and-so might be coming back. You know, I was like, okay, thank you, Peter David. Because I couldn't take another.
The big question is what's going to be the next one.
Yeah.
The next issue has another big reveal.
Well, that's what's just so fantastic about X Factor these days. You know, the last three or four issues have just been phenomenal.
Yeah.
I remember when
he's
sent me the outline
job.
For this issue. It was a big debate. I did some consulting for the X Office, and we talked about it. And you know, was it too soon to bring Layla Miller back after Psy Complex was just last year? And it turned out that Peterson and I have a plan. Trust me, this is going to turn out. And everyone's been so happy with all the beats. And
yes,
so
right.
Going on forward,
really
it's been fantastic.
That's great. Good. We love the series, and I'm really glad to see it back on track.
Yeah, because during Secret Invasion, the story was really off, and this, I think, really, it's back on where he wants it.
Cool. Big enough. Next X-book we're going to talk about is Young X-Men number 11. I am, and I'm totally surprised about this, a little heartbroken that this series is canceled after next issue.
Yep.
Yeah. Especially when we like Mark Guggenheim a lot, we like his writing. The first five or six issues of the series just felt very across the board.
I actually started reading this and stopped like after about four or five issues.
I think a lot of people did, which is why it's canceled.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the six issues after that have been great and increasingly better across the board. This issue, we see the character Dust. She's dying. She's forced into a situation where she has to release Donald Pierce, who is an evil robot who hates human mutants.
Always gets his face ripped
off. We get a little flash forward to the future, which I think is a very classic X-Men thing to do, literally. And it's great. It's really great, and it is too bad the series is being canceled.
Yeah, it is. It's very good. I always think it's funny, whenever they do flash forwards in the X-Men world, it's always like, okay, what character should we use? Well, we have to have Wolverine there. He's always got to be like old and like still angry.
Still
like,
drinking.
Just still drinking, always like, I see worse in this kid. We'll get through this. And it's the same in here. I think it's like, I don't know if that's...
I think they just like coloring that white thing.
They just add a white streak in his hair.
Easy.
Don't worry.
Wait, so what's the last... This is 11. What's the last... You said it's canceled. What's the last issue?
12.
I think the next.
So is the way the plot is going to wrap up into like a nice 12 issue arc?
Yeah, that's the thing that's great about it too, is that... I don't know. You might have the answer to this. I don't
wonderful
know how far.
Great cover. I
love
this.
Yeah. So good.
Yes. Wonderful cover.
Yeah. I don't know how far in advance he knew that 12 is going to be the last issue, but from the first issue to the last issue, it's actually a nice, neat bow of a story.
Maybe it'll become the freaks and geeks of the X-Men world, and people will collect it for years to come, and all these people will go on to make
Movies.
I did like how, because a lot of times when they have someone on your the team, like, oh, we're going to make them evil or they're going to do something bad, it's always very obvious, like, oh, they're bad. You get to really see the other side of why she's doing the so-called bad thing and how it makes sense to her, which is a great opportunity to kind of see both sides of it, instead of just painting her like, oh, that was stupid. She's obviously out of our team, you know. But it was really well done, and I think done in a way that makes me very upset that it's ending.
Now there are a couple new mutants on this team, or at least in the book. We're obviously going to see them in the book.
Yep.
What about Ink? Now this is a character that was kind of made for the series. Is he just going to be lost to the ages?
There's plans for Ink, and also for Gray Malkin, who's the other character that I've used in the series. So they'll be don't want to spoil too much about what's coming up in issue 12, but there's plans for all the characters that survive this issue and the next one.
Let me just ask you, you know what's going to happen. Do you sometimes just enjoy walking around like, I know that you
it's
don't.
Actually disappointing, because as a fan, I hate hearing stuff.
Yeah.
And I have this natural mechanism, though, where it's just, I know everything that's pretty much going on in the Marvel Universe, give or take, you know, with books, the specifics, the generalities, but when I open up a comic, it just leaves. I enter that world and I forget everything. So like, I'll get to the end of an issue and I'll be like, wow, that was fucking awesome. And I'll close the book and I'll be like, wow, I knew that 3 months ago, but it's still me. So,
that's cool.
So I tend not to be as, when it comes to movies, I'm very against spoilers. For some reason, I can't do it. Like, movies kind of telegraph it that fast. When I'm in a comic, I'm in that world and I can just
happens to me a lot, and I miss my stop on the subway.
Forget where you live.
Yeah, I forget where I am and what's going on, and then I'm like, fuck.
That happens a lot.
You really are old.
You are old. You're old. You're very old. Thanks. We already broke the news on the show that you will eventually have Alzheimer's. So maybe it's sitting in early.
Last but not least, we're going to talk about The Great Unknown, number one. This is a really good book, and you should all pick it.
I had no idea it came out. I've been looking forward to this. I didn't know it was on this show.
Really, really enjoyable. Basically, I don't want to ruin anything about this book for you, but essentially this guy keeps saying, oh, I have these great inventions. I'm right on the brink of releasing it. Bums around instead as a drunk for his entire life. Things twist and turn in a non-predictable way, and it's very cool and very original.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fun...
The art's great. Duncan Rouleau, who did Metal Man once recently.
It's one of my favorite artists.
Yeah. Love it. It's so
M-Rex is a series that I'm so upset that never, ever finished. That was just gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's a fun non-superhero comic.
Absolutely. Pick it up, and that's it. Oh,
I don't even want to look at it, because I've been waiting for this. I didn't know it was out. I picked up Soul Kiss.
Porter, don't let him look at it. What do you think?
All right, that's it for the stack. Let's get to the next section with the audience questions. For that, we're going to go to Booth Bag.
Booth Bag!
What's your favorite section?
I didn't mess up.
Yay! Great,
man.
Fantastic. Not that I ever mess up.
Not at all.
So the questions today are interesting.
Oh. Yeah, for those of you who don't know, Booth Man lives in the booth. That's why.
Yeah. Why he's dressed like an idiot.
Oh, come on.
Wow. Why is Justin such a jerk?
That's a question. I don't know.
What is the most glamorous part of being in the comics industry, and what is the least?
The most glamorous part? There's not much that's glamorous about it. I guess for me, from people looking at what I do, I think people always think the most glamorous part is like the travel. They do a lot of travel for Dallas County, but it does get tedious. And then Adrian celebrities, I don't like being in the spotlight. Travel is great, and I love it, but it does continue sometimes. But for me, the most glamorous part is just, I grew up a fanboy. You know, I grew up idolized. I remember when Image formed and all these guys, and whenever I get to meet somebody like, you know, Jim or Rob or Todd or Mark or these guys, that's the most glamorous part for me, is that you actually be able to relate to these people on a level where you're not just a fan in a way. That's what's made it all worth it for me, just to meet the people that are so cool in this industry.
Cool. Plus the free comics, right? You get free comics.
I do get free comics.
Man.
Cool, whoever asked that question, raise your hand. Pete's
and also, what is the lease?
Oh.
Yeah. Also, Porter should answer.
Yes.
Oh, gosh. Jeez. I can tell you a lot of leases. Well, no, but just like we said earlier, having that physical thing in your hand that you made, it's just so wonderful and nice. And the thing with the book that has actually been, not glamorous, but just so weird and fun, is that people want you to sign the book. And like, I never presumed that you would want me to write on something that you've just bought. And then they want you to sign it. That's great. And then at least, I don't know, it's terrible. Web hosting bills are high.
See me? Worst.
Is having to answer questions of why Marvel no longer has an open submissions policy.
that's looking forward.
It's not going to be fun. No. Having to reject a portfolio or having to explain to somebody why they're not good enough is definitely the least glamorous part. I just hate having I always be positive, but no one's gonna walk away and never been satisfied.
I'll come in and do it if you want.
Actually, I have a quick weird, like, least glamorous, which is just that a lot of times when I've already, so you know, I write and draw and ink and whatever, everything, the strip. So a lot of times after I've written it in my head, I'm like, oh, can't someone just, it's done. Why do I have to do all these other things?
So like you have the joke.
The actual doing of the comics is the
That's hilarious.
For real, raise your hands. Peace can bring you a gift, which is a copy of Basis Wanted. Next question.
Do you enjoy writing more mystical stories or stories based more in reality?
That's for you again, CB. how many mystical band stories do you
have? Truth be told, I actually enjoy the most more reality-based stories. Like, everything I write, even the mystical stuff, tends to have some kind of basis in reality. I try to relate it to some kind of thing that I've gone through or bring an emotion that I felt into those characters, so definitely the more reality-based stories.
Like the time the last of your Bloodstones was stolen.
Exactly.
Well, you did Wanderlust, right?
Yes.
Are you going to do more? Would you want to tell them what that
is? Yeah, Wanderlust is my autobiographical book. It's about when I was growing up, just my misadventures with drugs and alcohol and with women, mostly. Which were all misadventures. And that's there's been two issues out to date. So I do cool 8 to 11 page stories with a number of different artists. And two issues have been out. The trade is supposed to be up. It's a little bit delayed. It's coming out next month. And yeah, there will be more. Issue 3 will be coming out next summer. But each issue is kind of a stage in my life. Issue 1 was high school. Issue 1 was finishing up high school and moving into college. So 3 and 4 are going to be all about college. And then 5 and 6 tend to be my years when I was living in Japan. So.
Oh, wow.
That's great. Raise your hand if you ask that. He's going to bring you another copy of This Is Wanted. And
yeah,
let's get one last question, James. Boothman.
Who really watches The Watchmen?
That was my question. I get one.
That was your question.
I can't.
I mean, probably everybody next week.
Who's going to watch it?
I guess we'll find out next Friday.
Yeah.
I actually Twittered this earlier in the week, which I feel really nerdy saying. But I was walking down 14th Street, and there's a sign that says Ozymandias Realty for something. And I wanted to, like, I was like, is this a weird promotion? I want to get involved.
They've been doing a lot of that. They released, Night Owl Coffee, Night Owl Brand Coffee, and Dr. Manhattan Condoms.
Did you see the,
yeah.
I don't know if it, I think it was fake, but the Ben & Jerry's Ozymandias?
Yeah, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, they've been doing a lot of that. I'm actually at the point, I know there's like heresy, but I'm at the point where I'm like, all right, enough. I don't like to
get into that.
Yeah, there's just actually a little too much promotion.
Who's going to buy the Dr. Manhattan condom? That's a condom that if I were like in the market for condoms, I'd be like, this is definitely not going to work. It's just going to do something
terrible.
Well, I can tell
you the worst place
does
to get
in the dark?
Comic book stores.
Yeah. No, these are selling.
The bigger question is, who's going to buy 1,400 square foot of retail space on
1,400
square foot? Printing
room.
Raise your hand if you ask that. Pete's going to bring you a gift. Right. And that's it for your audience question. All right. It's time for our next section, which we like to call the Week in Geek.
Yeah!
We are going to rush through this a little bit, but first thing we're going to talk about is heroes. Still bad!
You can almost say worse.
It's terrible.
Yeah, one big piece of news, Milo and Hayden Panettiere. We already talked about it last week?
They broke up.
I wasn't here last week.
Sad. Because of a pregnancy scare.
Well, yes.
What?
Milo
yes.
was almost pregnant. That's how much of it.
And he was scared.
Yeah. He was like,
that would be scary.
You could have had a great angle on that. It was great. They're dating in real life. Not to drag this up.
No, they were. Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Is that an actual piece of wallpaper from like NBC.com?
No, that's a fan art that somebody made.
Okay.
Somebody who wrote
I have no idea what that's promoting.
Cars and
cool. And the TV's in the corner.
That's true. Hey, guess what? The next two things we're going to tell you about are crazier. First thing up is the Green Hornet, which, of course, the
yes!
Seth Rogen version.
Bruce Lee
version? What? Yes. He wrote it with the same guy that he wrote Knocked Up with and Pineapple Express, I think. And it's going to be directed by Michelle Gondry, is what they need to say.
Yeah,
that's
awesome.
Yeah,
it's
good.
Yeah, it's good.
I'm not going to understand a damn thing.
Actually, they are going to drive a cardboard car.
Yeah.
The super marionettes is high.
Yeah.
It's a weird choice, right?
The whole thing seems weird that these guys are writing an quote unquote action movie, first off, and then Michelle Gondry is going to come in and make it all weird.
I mean, it makes perfect sense to me. I think it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, no, I think it's going to definitely be unique.
Yes.
Well, with these voices in
it. Yeah, it was.
It was an action movie, so I feel like this is the next step.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know how much, like, because that kind of got a lot of its publicity by being like, look, it's a comedy, but with real action, which you can't really pull that trick twice.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I don't know. It's definitely
if it's good, they
got for it.
We can't market that way.
There's some crazy Adam West video going around the net today. Cause I got sent the link from like three people. Tom Brevoort sent it to me and a couple other people. Like,
internet fans?
Anybody use the internet?
What is he doing?
I clicked it and it was like a YouTube thing. And it was like greatest video ever. Something that Adam West said.
Was it like Adam West?
Your computer's breaking.
And I was like, oh, I don't want to look at it at work. But then like a couple other people sent it to me. And then they were like, the reply all. I was like, wow, that was awesome. Wow, this Adam West is crazy.
It's that thing after he comes back from the dentist. And he's in like the back of the van.
Nah.
Kurt.
Yeah.
Last thing we're going to talk about, this is another bit of news that was announced today. You may already know about the Spider-Man musical that is being done.
Yeah.
It's going to be directed by Julie Taymor, music by U2. They actually announced what the title is, and also it's going to be opening January 16, 2010. The title is Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark.
Nice, very good.
Thank you.
I don't know what that means.
It doesn't make much sense. Spider-Man doesn't do that. It's the only thing he really can't do.
Neither does Bono and Julie Taymor, but that's all right.
This story seems fake. This is happening. This is crazy. But and some of the stuff I've read about it is it gets into like a spider god, and there's all this very totemic.
JMS wrote it.
Yeah, exactly. So who knows what it's gonna be? There's someone who's telling me who the girl is in it.
Evan Rachel Wood.
Yes.
If
you want stories about this, next time Bendis is here, ask him, because he was involved and he had conversations with Julie Taymor and just the craziest stuff that you've heard.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, wow. Well, what do we do about that?
I don't know. I think that's it for the Week in Geek. Yeah. 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 Right, it is time for our next section, which is trivia. For that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePay.
This is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. Thank you so much for coming. It's an opportunity to win $25 free in the form of a gift card to Midtown Comics. Who would like $25 free? Raise your hand.
Yeah, someone.
Waving shy guy. Come on down.
Shy guy. Now I'm gonna embarrass myself.
Yeah.
What's your name? I'm Mark. Mark, audience? Audience, Mark.
I'm Mark. Right over here.
Okay, how this is gonna work is I'm going to read you three questions. If you get all three right, gift card yours. So Taste Trivia is going to be on X and Furnace. For no particular reason.
I've already lost. I can tell you that.
It's all right. Listen to all three possible answers.
Never been to the show.
Yeah. Listen to all three possible answers, and then choose the correct one. All right? Here we go. Colossus in the current in X and Furnace right now. Colossus.
This is the hardest part.
Is upset at the X-Men for doing nothing while whom is in limbo? Is it A, Wolverine, B, Ileana, or C, Mr. Belvedere? So it's either A, Wolverine, or B.
Yeah, I will go with Ileana.
Correct! 1-1. Okay, who would you say is the lamest superhero in X Infernus right now? Is it A, Pixie, B, Nightcrawler, or C, the Wonder Twins? So think about names. Is the name of person Pixie or Nightcrawler? I mean, Nightcrawler's a cool-sounding name, right?
I'll go with Pixie.
All right. You are good. Here we go.
Wow.
Which of these didn't happen in the last issue of X-Men? A, Wolverine goes on a berserker killing spree. B, Kurt teleports the team to a really hard-to-get-to place. Or C, Orko learns how to share. Which of these did not happen?
I will go with C.
C is correct! $25 free for you, sir!
Thank you.
Enjoy.
Thank you. Alright.
Orko learns how to share in issue 4.
Tomorrow is New Comic Book Day. We recommend you go to Midtown Comics because they've been nice enough to sponsor the show. What are you guys looking forward to, Pete?
Oh, this is a good week for comics. I'm going to say Fear Agent, Eye Against Eye. It's been a little bit of a break since the last issue, and I've been gnawing at the bit, so I'm looking forward to it.
Nice. I'm going to say another Rick Miranda book, Gigantic #3. It's been a nice series he's doing. Definitely pick it up.
I'm going to go for a Green Lantern. A new issue comes out, continuing the Rage of the Red Lanterns. Green Lantern's always good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think maybe this Wonderful Wizard of Oz thing, because I really like the art on the free
one. Oh, man, yeah.
And also, they're re-releasing some of the Kick-Ass issues, which I didn't have, so I can.
Nice. And plug some of your stuff. Where can people check
out? Oh my gosh. Well, some of my stuff would be my only book, so you should buy that. And it's called All Local Bands Suck Except Ours, and you can get it anytime you see me with any bag on me. Or you can go to PorterMason.com. You can buy it there.
Cool. TV, what are you looking forward to?
MPD Psycho Volume 8, Dark Horse. I'm with the big manga guy. I read it in Japanese, but like, see how the translations go. And Runaways Number 7, which is Takeshi Miyazawa coming back to do the artwork now that I'm ready to finish stuff. So,
cool. And plug some of your stuff.
Exit First Number 4 comes out in a month.
Can't wait.
Tomorrow, actually, Itak, the Forsaken World Number 3, which did the adaptation of, comes out. It's our partnership with the French publisher Soleil doing some adaptations here. And
I love that.
And then Astonishing Tales every month is doing the lead story with Punisher and Wolverine, art by Kenny Rockefeller, who's an amazing new penciler. He works mainly for Top Cow, with the Legend of Marvel Force for these 6 issues. It's fantastic, and that'll be out not this week, but next week, I believe.
So. Very cool. Awesome. All right, so check all of... Yes.
One more thing I just wanted to say. I performed... I perform every Saturday at 10:30 at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater with a group called Ruben Williams. So if you do want to see me in person and buy a book for me, that would be a good place to find me because I'm in person doing the show. Right.
So they should come up to you during the show?
Probably just sort of tackle me and get to a scrum, and then if they win, they get the book for free.
Wow! That's a deal!
I'm going to take you on next week on the show, we have Jeff Newalt and friends. Who's going to be here? I don't know. But Jeff Newalt.
John Furry.
Always a good friend of the show, so we're very excited about that. Also, you can check us out almost every day of the week at youtube.com/comicbookclub. A couple of people we want to thank Porter for good night.
Thanks, everybody.
Can I take your guys' picture?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Publishers Weekly.
I brought my camera, so I'd like to get a picture.